David Crow. Thank you for tuning in to episode 145 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crow, that's crow with an E, at theinfectiousmyth.com. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Listen every Tuesday at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on prn.fm or download the MP3 after broadcast on iTunes or other podcast aggregators. You can listen to any of the last 5 episodes over the phone by dialing the U.S. phone number 701-719-0990 and following the instruction. You will be responsible for any long-distance charges. And remember, I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show, and if you include your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift, which will be one of the bookmarks I make by hand using my own photographs. If you would like to sponsor the show as an individual or advertiser, please contact me. You can donate via PayPal using the email david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com or go to theinfectiousmyth.com/donate.php for more information. We are also at patreon.com/infectiousmyth if you want to make monthly donations. Even a little bit each month helps. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want the show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information you are gleaning, for the support that you get for some non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges you get to others. If you'd like me to speak at a meeting of an organization you're a member of, on just about any topic that I've covered on these shows, I'd be happy to discuss this with you. I appreciate you listening, commenting, and suggesting guests. I appreciate your financial support as well. It's terribly sad to hear about the terrorist attacks in the UK, Manchester, and now London. There is no justification for this kind of violence, but there's also no justification for the violence inflicted on the Yemenis and other people living in Muslim lands. Even though the civilians killed in our bombings of them are usually anonymous to us. And there is a connection. The Manchester attacker was Libyan and part of a group of jihadists tolerated by the UK because of their mutual hatred of Gaddafi. That seems to have backfired so blatantly that even the mainstream media in the UK, such as BBC and The Guardian, are talking about it. There is also a connection between the West's wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Yemen, and Syria, I hope I didn't forget any, and this terrorism. Our terrorism of civilian populations helps provide the justifications that a small number of European citizens need to help them feel that their act of mass murder is a religious act. Sure, we wouldn't have these attacks without jihadism, but it's naive to believe that our military actions aren't making the situation worse. They simply didn't exist in Western countries before the so-called war on terror. And now for some feedback. Matt on Twitter said, regarding episode 142 with Michael Abelman of Soul Food Farms, what an exemplar for the green cooperative local movement. Austin, Texas is up there too. Canada, however, seems way out in front of the US in applying the ideals of this movement. Bill, via email, wrote, I had a conversation with a relative about a particular alternative healing method. He said, if it was effective and less expensive, the insurance companies would cover it. They are in the business of making money, etc. I didn't have an answer for him. If alternative healing methods are less toxic, less expensive, or more effective, why aren't insurance companies more open to investigating and covering them? Why is it that most alternative health doctors don't take insurance? I live in a large metropolitan area with many people. If people were being healed and cured with alternative treatments, wouldn't I hear more about it from neighbors? Wouldn't positive stories spread? That's a really good question. I don't have a good answer. I think that part of the answer may be that a lot of alternative health is more of a maintenance. People go to stay well rather than to fix themselves up when they get sick. And so although intense treatments such as cancer chemotherapy might be horribly expensive for the insurance companies to pay, it happens to a relatively small portion of people over a small amount of time. Whereas if everybody went to alternative healers, say every week or every month, the total cost might be much higher. But that's just a guess. I have no evidence for that. If anybody knows the answer for this, why are health insurance companies so negative towards alternative treatments, I'd certainly like to hear about it. Orville on Facebook had a comment on episode 143 with Judy Mikovits. He said, is Mikovits saying that HIV hasn't been proven to cause AIDS? And what happened to people who were given those regular dosages of AZT in the first decades of AIDS? Well, the evidence is that everybody who took AZT in the early days of AIDS, that would be after 1987 when it was approved, just about everybody died. It wasn't clear exactly what Mikovits was saying regarding HIV and AIDS. I think she certainly felt that HIV hadn't been proven to be the only cause of AIDS. But I think if it's not the only cause of AIDS and there are other things, we need to look at those other things and see what is causing mysterious immune deficiency in some people. And now let's go to our guest, another traumatic story of a parent being jailed for years because of the mysterious death of a baby in their care. In the summer of 2013, Joe and Charlotte Whitaker, a married couple, and their three children cleaned up and moved into a mobile home that they had previously rented. One day, while home with his dad, Joe, Jaden seemed to collapse, and the dad, Joe, called 911. This eventually resulted in both parents being charged with child abuse, the details of which we'll get into in this discussion. I'm pleased to have with me today the mother, Charlotte Whitaker. The father, Joe, unfortunately, is still in jail. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Thank you for having me, David.
So you sent me a bunch of documents on this case. In August of 2013, your son, Jaden, had a couple of falls, but there seemed to be no consequences afterwards, so you didn't really think there was anything of it until this nightmare happened later. Is that reasonably accurate that, you know, kids crawl around when they're that age and fall off things, and as long as, you know, they seem okay afterwards, you don't pay much attention?
That is correct. Jaden had recently just started learning to crawl, so he was very mobile. And just a few days prior to his collapse with Joe, he had fallen. My mother was watching him, and he had fallen from her couch. And roughly about a week before Jaden had became unconscious, he had fallen from his older brother Cameron's bed, which was a fall of about 3.5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, we tended to him right away. He cried just for a few moments, but then he seemed fine. So, you know, we didn't think anything about it at that time. We didn't think he needed to go to the hospital.
Right.
So we brushed it off to, you know, that's just an infant crawling. He seemed fine. We soothed him. Everything seemed fine at that time.
Yes. So I wasn't exactly clear what happened. So when Joe was, I guess the, a little bit before Joe was at home with the baby, you had noticed that Jaden was being, he wanted to lie on your chest. He was being, you thought, maybe more loving than normal and less active. But afterwards, you thought he seemed to be much less energetic than he had been in the past.
That is true. You know, we've been going through this for 4 years, and I've had a lot of time to recollect on things. And
mm-hmm.
Jaden was always a very energetic baby. His little legs were always kicking. We used to joke and say he was riding a bicycle because he was just always moving. And,
right.
After that day, you know, we just started talking about things and remembering. And the night before Jaden became unconscious, there were two occasions that he just laid his head down on my chest, just like he was tired.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I didn't think anything about it. You know, I just was just, I wanted to be loved by him, so it just felt nice, you know, to have him just lay there on me. But now that I think about it, I often wonder, you know, was that something going on inside of his head? Maybe he was starting to get sick, and we just didn't realize it.
Right, right. That it seems quite possible. I mean, kids, babies are always doing new things, and so you might not realize the significance. Everything a baby does is cute, right? It's your
right, exactly.
Your baby.
And I just was embracing the moment of him just laying his head down on me.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Now that I think back, I mean, it could have been something significant.
Yes. So the after Joe called 911, the baby was rushed to a local hospital, and it seemed at that hospital there were some strange things happening. There were policemen and there were people talking about child abuse and stuff. Can you describe what happened at the first hospital?
Yes. It almost instantly seemed as if we were being accused of child abuse. We rushed to the hospital and we just, you know, where's our baby? Where's our son? And they escorted us into a room to the side of the waiting room and asked us to wait in there, that the doctor would be with us shortly. And it was pretty chaotic at that time. We were both crying and we were upset, and family was coming and going. But probably within 20 minutes, I remember somebody opening the door, and there were police officers, probably four or five police officers outside of the door. And I remember somebody saying that they suspected that Jaden was abused. And, I mean, Joe and I just cannot wrap our head around that. You know, there's our son. Our son is sick. What's wrong with him? And we haven't been here 20 minutes, and you're claiming that he's abused.
And so what were the symptoms? I mean, with Joe, according to the description you sent me, Joe picked him up, and his sort of his arm was funny, and his eyes were kind of rolling around in his head. They weren't really focusing. That was, like, the first symptoms that caused Joe to call 911?
Yes, actually, how that happened, David, was Joe went to change Jaden's diaper, and when he laid him down on, we have a very large sectional couch with a leather ottoman, which is where we usually changed him, and Joe laid him down, and he noticed Jaden's right arm twist completely around, and that just really freaked Joe out. He called me instantly, and he said, "Charlotte, something's not right with Jaden." But as we were on that call, Joe became more frantic, and he says, "He's not breathing right now, Charlotte." So I said, "Joe, I'm calling 911." So I hung up. I called 911, and then they contacted Joe. But it was his arm twisted completely around, and he kind of arched, and he just started looking off in the distance, and then his breathing became erratic. And then Joe performed CPR on him until the ambulance came.
Right, later, some doctors have talked about Jaden probably having a seizure at that point.
Right. When we got to the hospital, like I said, initially they were claiming that it was child abuse, and we could not wrap our head around that. And we asked, you know, because we didn't know what was wrong with him. And eventually what we were told was that he had some slight brain swelling and a slight brain bleed.
Right. And so were there any external symptoms of it? I mean, his behavior obviously was unusual. He was unconscious, possibly not breathing, but were there signs of bruising or anything else like that that they could see in the hospital?
No, the only thing, he did not have any sort of external markings on his, you know, chest cavity, anywhere. There were no neck injuries. There was nothing like that. He had a few small bruises on his forehead from where he had been mobile, learning to crawl, and we had just moved. So he had 2 to 3 small bruises on his forehead, but other than, and they were older bruises, they were fading.
Right.
But other than that, no, I mean, all of my medical reports that we have show that his extremities were impeccable. I mean, he had no marks. Nothing.
Right. And I mean, one of the things about shaken baby syndrome is, I guess the reason why they had to call it shaken baby syndrome is because there's no external marks. So if somebody was, for example, bashing a baby against the wall or something, there'd obviously be lots of external marks. So by saying that you shook the baby, they can say the reason there's no external marks is because you just shook the baby and you didn't squeeze the baby hard. I don't know how you shake a baby hard without squeezing it, but that's the theory.
Without
right?
leaving markings, I don't know that either.
Yes, and I know that there have been, there was an engineer who sort of took a crash dummy, you know, a baby version of the crash dummy, and tried to shake the baby as hard as he could, being a model, right, to see what the stresses were, and couldn't generate anywhere near the amount of force necessary to produce the injuries that people see. So then the baby, you're in Tennessee, right?
That is correct.
Right, and so the baby was flown to Knoxville, which is a big city, bigger hospital, and
Yes, about 2 hours away from where we are.
Right. But before you got to Knoxville, did you have to go to see the police?
Yes, actually, the police detective, and at that time, the Child Protection Service investigator was at the hospital as well, and they asked if we would be willing to go to the police department to give a formal statement while Jaden was in transport to Knoxville Hospital. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I agreed. We said, sure, whatever we need to do to get this cleared up so we can go be with our son.
Right.
And so, yes, we did voluntarily go to the police department.
And what did they do? Like, what kind of questioning?
Well, when we arrived at the police department, the detective told us that he had been trying to decide the best way to interview us, and he decided that he wanted to give us a voice analysis stress test, basically a lie detector test.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he asked if we were okay with that, and both Joe and I said, sure, you know, we just want to get this over with so we can see Jaden.
Right.
So they said that they were going to interview Joe first, and they went and put me in a room by myself for what seemed like forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally they came to get me, and they said that Joe had finished. It was my turn. So from my questioning, they asked me standard questions. Did you hurt Jaden? Do you know who hurt Jaden? Do you suspect anyone of hurting Jaden?
Right.
It took maybe 15 minutes, and then the detective left the room, and he came back, and he said, you know, I remember him specifically saying, grab your water bottle, you and Josie, to get on the road to see your baby. Thank you for cooperating. Have a safe trip.
And you have, I think in the documents you gave me, you have basically the document from the police saying that you both passed this lie detector test. So
yes, I actually have the documentation of both of the reports where Joe and I both passed our voice stress test. And we were actually told by the police detective as well as the CPS investigator that we had both passed and done great, and they wished us well. They said, you know, the medical doctors are just going to have to figure this out.
Right.
Best of luck to you. They sent us on our way to see our son.
So you drove 2 hours, which must have been pretty stressful. Worrying about what was happening to Jaden, and then you arrive at the big hospital in Knoxville.
Yes, it was so scary because we didn't know what to expect, and we were so scared for Jaden.
Right.
We made our way. He was in the pediatric ICU unit, and it was pretty late at this time, probably close to midnight by the time we finally made it there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he was asleep at the time, and the nurse, this nurse was actually very kind to us. There were not a lot that were, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But she was actually very nice to us, and she told us that he was doing great and that from the report they received from the treating initial hospital that they thought he was going to be in much worse condition, but that he was doing great and that the doctor was going to be performing a follow-up CT scan on him soon, and but that everything looked good, that he looked good.
And did they perform any operations or anything on him at in Knoxville?
No, he did not require any sort of operations or surgeries or anything. They did the follow-up CT scan, which showed that I believe he had a 6 millimeter, 6 millimeter swelling, I think is how they listed it on the CT scan. But that everything looked good. It was very minute, was their wording. And within just 2 to 3 days, Jaden was sitting up in the hospital. They had taken his breathing tube out. They had placed a neck collar on him just for preventative, even though he had a scan and he had, you know, his neck was impeccable. He had no markings on his neck. There was nothing wrong with his neck. He's smiling. I have videos of him smiling in the hospital, rolling around in his bed.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to be doing so much better within just a short amount of time.
And did Jaden recover pretty much fully from this in the end?
Well, unfortunately, we went into a nightmare with CPS, and they placed our son in foster care. He was not allowed to come home with us. We tried to petition for our family to get custody of him, and they refused. So he went into foster care.
So you haven't seen him?
We haven't seen him since.
I'm sorry.
It's very hard. We haven't seen him since. We did, of course, ask about him. They wouldn't allow us to even have supervised visitation with him. So we started going around collecting his medical records. We want to know how he's doing.
Right.
And the medical records that we obtained showed that he was doing great. He was on his age-appropriate level. He was, doing really well at that time. So at least we had that knowledge that he was recovering. He was doing really good.
And you just haven't been able to see him since this whole thing happened.
No, they took our son. They refused to place him with our family. They would give us brief updates at first, but they immediately fought to terminate our rights to Jaden. Jaden went in the hospital in August, and in September they filed a petition to terminate our rights to him. And they did. They were successful in doing that.
But that wasn't the only thing that was happening. Both of you were charged with aggravated child abuse and aggravated child neglect in September as well.
That is correct. While we were fighting with DCS and CPS for our son, Jaden, they also removed our two older children, Lexi and Cameron. They were both 9 years old at the time. They removed them from our home and placed them with their older parents. So we're fighting to get all of our children back. And then we both were arrested for aggravated child abuse and aggravated child neglect. We were arrested. And they placed our bond at $100,000 each.
And I wanted to ask you, how would you describe your financial situation before this happened?
Before this happened, my husband, Joe, was actually a stay-at-home father because, of course, we had three children at home,
right.
Brand new baby. Both of our older children were active in sports and academic activities. So mm-hmm. Joe was Mr. Mom, basically. I mean, he was always busy with the kids getting into sports and activities.
Right. And
I was working.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was a property manager at the time, and, I was making a decent income. But it, with a large family, it's, we by no means were wealthy.
Right. So when it comes to legal fees, you probably didn't have $100,000 sitting in the bank to pay high-priced lawyers, right?
Not at all. We had, not at all, no. When I know that for myself, when they took me to jail, I was lying in that jail cell thinking I'm never going to get out of here because I knew that we didn't have $10,000 to put up for me to get out or $10,000 to put Joe, to get Joe out. But by a miracle, our family came together and they got us both out. And we were both out by the next afternoon.
They bailed you out. I mean, that was $10,000 initially, but then you said later it was $100,000 bail.
It was the bail was set at $100,000, but to bond us out, we had to put up 10%.
Okay.
That's how it works here. So it basically cost us $20,000 just to get out of jail.
Right. And, of course, you do get that money back. Well, no, you don't, right? That's the fee.
No, that we don't get that back. We never see that again. So that was $20,000 just to get out of jail, and that's not counting the lawyers that we had hired, for the juvenile proceedings with Jaden.
Right.
And then once it went criminal, then we had to obtain a criminal lawyer.
Right.
And it's just never ending. It's just the fees have been astronomical.
I can only imagine. Now you were talking about lawyer's fees for Joe. We should add that about a month after both of you were charged, the charges against you were dropped completely. And
actually, that was 3 years later. My charge is held for 3 years, and Joe and I were due to go to criminal court together, and just a few days before we were due to go to criminal court to stand our trial, the DA dismissed my charges out of the blue.
Wow.
Nothing had changed. Nothing had changed with their case. There was nothing different. She just decided to dismiss my charges and pursue Joe.
And against Joe, one of those charges against Joe was dropped, the aggravated child abuse. So it was now aggravated child neglect.
Actually, they dropped the child neglect charge and they stood with the child abuse.
Okay,
charge.
Sorry. I got that wrong. Okay, so I presume child neglect is things like not providing the necessities of life, things like that. A child abuse is actually physically harming your child. So that's the most serious charge, right?
Correct. That is correct.
And in February of 2014, Joe was sentenced to 15 years. Is that correct?
This year, Joe was sentenced. We had our criminal trial for Joe in January. And we actually were very confident. We thought, because we have many experts that have reviewed Jaden's records and said he was not abused.
Right.
Very, you know, very wonderful doctors, highly accredited doctors, reviewed, wrote detailed reports. We went into court, and we felt confident that the truth was going to come out and Joe would be free and we could start trying to pick up the pieces.
Right.
And they found him guilty, and we were devastated.
Was it a jury?
It was a jury trial.
Yes. I have a lot of skepticism about jury trials. It's just my instinct that, you know, when it comes to a baby, you know, it's a natural instinct to people that want to blame somebody for what happened.
Right.
And in the case, if they're not going to blame you or Joe, then they have to accept that this was an act of God or it was something else, but there's nobody at fault. And it seems a natural instinct that you want to find a bad person and put them in jail. It's just my assessment of that.
I agree with you. I think when someone hears child abuse, I think their minds were made up before they even heard all of the medical evidence. And, of course, with our situation, it's a very complex case. There's a lot of medical data, and it's really hard for this, you know, the standard person to understand a lot of what was going on.
Yeah. Now, is 15 years is the complete sentence? Is Joe likely to get out before the 15 years, or is he going to have to spend, unless something can overturn this case, is he going to have to spend the 15 years actually in jail?
Unfortunately, in the state of Tennessee, the charge of aggravated child abuse carries the 15 years to be served at 100%. And that's because there is a law in Tennessee called Haley's Law, which is a very sad story. There was a legitimately abused baby.
Right.
This baby had acid poured in its eyes. I mean, horrible, horrible story.
Right.
They passed Haley's Law. So now anyone charged with aggravated child abuse, it's a mandatory 15 to 25 years. We went to a sentencing hearing, and Joe had tons of letters of support written to the judge. His friends and family, I mean, they were amazing. They just wrote these very thoughtful and kind letters portraying Joe for who he really is, a good father and a good husband and a good man. And the judge gave him the minimum. She gave him 15 years.
Well, minimum sentences are all another story. One of my recent shows was actually on bail reform. And, you know, when you mentioned the $10,000 fee, if you had had the resources to get a loan of $200,000, which not too many people do, but I guess if you owned a $1 million house, you could always mortgage it or something like that, then you would have got all the money back. But if you were forced to go to a bail bondsman, you end up $20,000 down the drain.
Right.
And with mandatory minimums, of course, no matter how many mitigating factors there are, I mean, obviously you didn't want Joe to be found guilty, but even so, if there were mitigating factors, it's the first offense, and you know, whatever, you would think the judge could have the discretion to say this is not a case of Haley. But I guess in Tennessee, they took the worst possible case of child abuse, and they've applied it to everybody.
That is exactly what they did, because my husband does not have a criminal record. Neither of us have ever been in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just we were just a family, you know, and all of a sudden we're thrown into this situation, and she can't use any of that. It's a mandatory 15 years.
Did you recover custody of your other two children or retain custody?
No, we are actually still in a battle. Cameron is with his mother, and luckily I do get to see him. She still allows me to see him. We have a very good relationship, so I'm able to get him every other weekend.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter Lexi, her dad has started allowing me more time with her, but it's not went back to how it was before, and the custody order has not changed. But they are both being really good about letting me see them more often.
Right.
But we still have a lot of things to work out to get it back to the way it was before.
Right, right. I mean, especially considering that you were never actually, you were charged, obviously, but you were never convicted of anything because they dropped the charges, and yet they're still treating you like you're a criminal.
Exactly, exactly. And that's so hard. And our older children are, you know, they've been through so much. And
mm-hmm.
It's hard for us to understand any of this as a grown-up, let alone them. They're both 13 years old now, and, you know, they're so damaged by this, and it breaks my heart, you know. It's very hard, and all I can do is just get them as often as their other parents will let me and just make sure they know that they're loved and that, you know, we're still fighting. We're fighting for Joe. We're still fighting for Jaden. You know, and hopefully one day our family can be brought back together because it's been ripped apart by this medical misdiagnosis, and it happens so frequently, and people just don't understand it, and it's just, it's devastating.
Yes, yes, it is, and it's like when the medical system gets the bone between its teeth, the bit between its teeth, it's not going to let go, and it plays for 100%. It was playing for total custody of your children. It was playing for both of you to jail. I mean, it didn't get everything it wanted, but it was sure trying.
It was trying, and the worst part is we begged and pleaded for those doctors to test Jaden. We knew he wasn't abused. Please test him. There's so many medical mimics of shaken baby syndrome out
right
there. It's proven. Short falls, his falls. There's so much, and they would not listen to me. They would not listen to Joe. They said they were not going to test him for anything, that he was abused, and they were not going to test him.
Well, I think the reality is there's more and more people who believe that there is no shaken baby syndrome, that it's not possible to shake a baby to cause these injuries, that you can certainly injure a baby with physical force, but you know, if you pick up a baby and shake it, you're probably going to leave bruises. You're probably going to hit the baby against something. There's going to be all kinds of evidence that you were abusing the baby. But this
right
business of only having internal bleeding and things like that.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and especially in the case of, you know, Jaden and so many others, there were no neck injuries whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, and as you stated earlier, it just seems common sense if you're going to shake a baby that hard to cause the internal brain damage, you're going to show neck injury.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I mean, even if you could generate the damage within the brain by shaking, you would end up like tearing muscles and veins and nerves and stuff in the neck. It's just no way you could shake the head that fast without doing damage to the neck.
Right.
So some of the experts you had, and did you get assistance? There's a lot of experts that you got to support you. That must have cost an awful lot to do that.
Well, the first expert that we had gotten was Dr. Ronald Wright. He is a very highly accredited forensic pathologist.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually charged us at a pro bono rate.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he charged us less than his normal fee. But once he got involved in our case, he stopped charging us because he knew that Jaden was not abused.
And he said that Jaden had a stroke.
Correct, yes. He said that our son had a stroke that day. And he just stopped charging us because he knew this was an injustice. Dr. Julie Mack is a radiologist.
right.
Hershey, Pennsylvania. A wonderful doctor. She did not charge us a dime because she knows that our son was not abused.
And she said, well, just let me, before we move on, let's talk about what Dr. Mack found. Dr. Mack said that Jaden had a bone disorder.
Right. They had alleged that Jaden had two fractures in his right leg.
Mm-hmm.
One at his knee and one at his ankle. And that just dumbfounded Joe and I because, and the doctors told us that the fractures had to be within a week old. And we scratched our heads. We said he'd been crawling just the night before. He was standing up on his leg. He never cried. There was no swelling. How could he have fractures in his legs? But then when we presented his medical reports to Dr. Julie Mack, who again is a radiologist with a qualification in pediatric radiology, she said that Jaden had a bone abnormality. It was not a fracture, as a typical person would think, you know, a bone break. No, it was on his growth plates where it had not developed.
And this sort of goes along with some of the other doctors, but I mean, why don't you go through all the doctors that you remember and tell us what they found in terms of Jaden's health condition or anything that might have explained the seizure or any other aspect of Jaden's health.
Okay. Well, you know, once the situation happened, Joe and I felt helpless. We felt like these doctors were not listening to us.
Right.
So we started reaching out to whoever would listen to us.
Right.
Will you review our son's records and tell us what you find? And as I said, we had Dr. Wright, who determined that Jaden had a stroke.
Right.
Which eventually the treating doctors for Jaden admitted that he did. In the beginning, they said he did not. But eventually, once all of our doctors started confirming he had a stroke, they started agreeing, yes, he had a stroke. But in their opinion, he had a stroke because he was abused.
So shaken baby syndrome can cause babies to have strokes now.
I guess.
It seems like the symptoms increase to explain whatever they find. Okay, so other doctors who looked at the records?
Other doctors on our case, Dr. Charles Hyman, he is a pediatric specialist. He's from California. Amazing doctor. And he had a team of researchers. It's not just him. He has a full team. Dr. Hyman wrote an over 50-page detailed report based on all of Jaden's medical history, medical reports. He presented us with a PowerPoint. I mean, it was very detailed. And Dr. Hyman highly suspects that Jaden suffers from a metabolic disease, possibly hereditary. It's very possible that I could have passed him disease, because I was recently diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is hereditary and which could explain everything that Jaden has, as well as vitamin deficiency. I'm vitamin D deficient, and that would explain Jaden's bone abnormalities because he did not get enough vitamin D when he was born.
Right, and he was also talking about a mitochondrial deficiency.
Right. We consulted with those were the doctors that were on our case, Dr. Wright, Dr. Mack, and Dr. Hyman. Unfortunately, in the criminal trial, the judge excluded Dr. Wright and said he could not testify.
On what basis?
She said because he was a forensic pathologist and he was not qualified to testify because our son, thankfully, is still alive and not a dead child. So that was her basis, was that he typically works on dead people. So I'm not sure how that even happened, but that was our ruling. So that knocked us down to our two doctors that could testify.
Right. But there were others. You got these reports afterwards from, like, Dr. Benson, Dr. Innes, others?
Yes, there were several other doctors that we had consulted with. Unfortunately, we were unable to get them on our case just because of their scheduling conflicts or their being,
right,
you know, overlooked or financial reasons. We just
right.
could not afford them.
Right.
And we had an orthopedic surgeon who also stated Jaden had the vitamin deficiency, possibly rickets. Right. Of rickets.
Which is a vitamin D deficiency, right?
Correct. We had Dr. Enos is a hematologist that read all of Jaden's lab results.
Right.
And he kind of went into the same line as far as it being a vitamin deficiency, a collagen issue, which goes to the metabolic diseases.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to think. We had seven or eight different doctors.
Yeah. The ones I looked at. So let me just summarize them, and you can add to whatever I say. So Dr. Benson said it was probably rickets due to either a deficiency of vitamin D, phosphorus, or calcium, and that the history of baby Jaden was that he was very slow growing. Is that true? That he was?
Yes, he was a small baby, and he did lose weight at the beginning because I tried to breastfeed, and he just wasn't feeding well. So he did lose some weight, and he was always on the smaller side. And plus, right. He also had severe acid reflux from the time of his birth, pretty much up until the incident where he, you know, became unconscious.
So he was throwing up a lot.
Yes, projectile, very bad acid reflux.
Mm-mm. Okay, so Dr. Hyman also believed it was rickets or a mitochondrial deficiency caused by vitamin D, vitamin C, or copper deficiency. That was his analysis. Is that correct?
Right.
And Dr. Innes believed it was a vitamin C deficiency, also known as scurvy.
Right.
So there's a lot of commonality in those three diagnoses.
Right, exactly.
And Dr. Hollick hypothesized Ehlers-Danlos hypermobility syndrome, something I've never heard of before, and that's apparently something that you have. Your joints are very mobile?
Yes, Joe and I went to Boston last year to meet with Dr. Hollick because he's a world-renowned physician. He's a specialist in Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and we went and met with him, and he diagnosed me with Ehlers-Danlos hypermobility. I'm very flexible, mostly in my arms and my hands. I can touch my thumb back to my forearm.
complete opposite of me.
Yes, I can. It looks really weird, but yes, I can do that.
Right.
Several other co-symptoms go along with that. And the thing with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is it can cause spontaneous ruptures of blood vessels, which could very easily explain the stroke that our son had. And of course, we did not have access to Jaden for Dr. Hollick to assess him, but I did show him photographs of Jaden, and just he asked medical questions, history of Jaden, as well as my daughter, Lexi, who is also hypermobile and suffers some of the same symptoms. And right. He said it is very likely that they both also have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Right, and it was also pointed out, then Dr. Miller talked about the easy bruising and joint hypermobility and this syndrome called MELAS, which is a mitochondrial syndrome.
Right.
And mitochondria are sort of the energy regulators in our body, so any problem with mitochondria means you probably have less energy than you should have.
Right.
Now, you had a bout with C. difficile when you were 23, and afterwards you had health consequences after that?
I did have C. diff back years ago, and ever since I had that, it was horrible. I was so sick, and ever since I've had that, I have not been, I guess you would say, not right. Mm-hmm. My digestive system is just not right. My energy levels are way off. I do bruise extremely easy. Someone just, you know, flicks me, I bruise.
Right. Did you take a lot of antibiotics when you had C. difficile?
I had my wisdom teeth taken out, and the antibiotics that I had taken from that, I guess, is what caused the C. diff.
And how did they cure the C. difficile?
It was a horrible experience. No one could figure out what was wrong with me, and right. I suffered for probably a month or longer, and I was throwing up. I could not keep anything down. I lost over 20 pounds. I could not walk across the room without feeling like I was going to fall on the floor. It was horrible. And finally, I just went into a doctor's office one day, and my doctor was not there, so I saw a different doctor. And this man was amazing, and he would not let me leave until he determined what was wrong with me, and he figured out it was C. diff. And they put me on, I can't remember the medication it was called, but it helped, and I got better. But as soon as I went off the medicine, I relapsed. And this went on for about a year. I kept relapsing back and having the symptoms. And finally, it finally kicked, and I got better. But again, my body did not fully recover from that.
Right, right. Was Jaden at the doctor any time within a week or two before his collapse?
No, he was not.
So he was just doing normal, not even well baby checkups or anything?
The last appointment that he had was back in April.
And these events happened in August, so...
And these events happened in August. So in April, he had his well baby checkup and his shots, and then this happened August the 15th.
Right. So it doesn't seem that there could have been a medical procedure of any kind that could have triggered this.
No.
Just nothing. And how is Joe doing in jail? It must be tremendously difficult for him, obviously. Also thinking about his family at the same time.
It's been extremely hard on Joe, of course, because he's such a family man.
Mm-hmm.
And his older son, Cameron, he raised from a baby as the primary parent, and he was always with Cameron and then with Jaden, and we were always together as a family. And now, you know, he's torn away from all of us, thrown into an environment that I would not wish on anybody. And
right.
He's such a strong man. He's trying to suck it up, and just he knows that we are out here fighting for him. He knows we have motions filed and appeals. You know, we're going to go appeals. So he knows, and I think that gives him hope. And he really tries to put on a smile when we go visit him to let us know he's okay. But I know it's so hard on him.
So the two children, except for Jaden, get to visit with him sometimes?
Yes, his son Cameron gets to go with me. We get to visit him once a week on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
So Cameron always gets to go with me, which is great. And my daughter, unfortunately, is not allowed to go because her daddy will not let her visit Joe. So that's another story.
Right, right.
But luckily Cameron gets to go to visit with him. So usually once a week it's Cameron's mother, Joe's mother, and myself, we get to go visit him. So I know that always lifts Joe's spirits, even though it's behind glass. We can't touch him.
Really?
We can't hug him. No, it's horrible. It's so bittersweet because we want to see him, but it's so sad.
Yeah, I have been to visit somebody in jail where it was behind a glass screen, and it is the most clinical experience. I've seen that in movies, but when I was actually there, it was when I realized just how dehumanizing this situation is. Everything around you is glass or metal, no human contact. Is there a chance that eventually Joe will get into a lower security prison and personal contact might be allowed?
Well, currently he is in, right now he is just in the county jail, so he's only about 5 minutes from us, and what is going on with our case right now?
I did want to talk about that.
Okay, great. We have filed a motion for a new trial,
mm-hmm.
because we feel like Joe did not get a fair trial.
Right.
We feel like the exclusion of our forensic pathologist did not give him a fair trial. We also feel that because our doctors had to testify via pre-recorded testimony, so they were not even allowed to testify live through Skype or one of those means. They had to do it ahead of time, a few months before the trial, which means that there were many objections that got ruled on. The tapes were edited. So we feel like that just didn't flow with the jury.
Right. It's nowhere near the same as when you stand up and they look at this person and they look smart and they look intelligent, they sound good, and that's completely different than a canned recording that's maybe been chopped into pieces, like you say, with
exactly.
pieces and taken out of it.
You know, we just could not afford to get those doctors here in person. So we had to resort to the video testimony, but we weren't even allowed to have live video testimony. And there's many other reasons that we feel Joe deserves another trial. Mm-hmm. So we have the motion for the new trial scheduled for September the 22nd. So once the judge rules on that motion, we will know at that point if they're going to send him off to a prison or if she approves it, which we hope and pray that she will. They will probably keep him where he's at until we do the new trial.
Right,
so
because
a lot
one of the
things up in the air right now.
Right, because one of the problems of him being moved to a prison is probably going to be a lot further away, right?
Right, and that's a concern. There is a prison that he could possibly be sent to that is about a little over an hour from here.
Okay.
But again, I think once they get into the prison system, they could send them wherever they want to send them.
Right.
So he could end up in Memphis, which is 10 to 12 hours away. So we just don't know right now.
Right, right. Have you been able to raise any money? Do you have a program to raise money?
Well, right now our funds have pretty much been depleted. I'm in the works of trying to start a GoFundMe page, hoping that will help because, like I said, it's just been astronomical, the amount of money that we have had to pay. Our families had to pay,
it's
getting more and more.
Yeah, I think for 90% of families in America, something like this would be a huge financial stress, apart from all the other stresses.
It definitely is, and unfortunately, when Joe's verdict came out, I lost my job, which in turn means that I lost our home because I couldn't afford it, so
right.
I'm living with family, and it's like a domino effect, and I'm just trying to remain strong and get back on my feet and just fighting. I mean, fighting is my job for Jaden.
You got a lot to fight for.
Yes, I do. But it's my family, and I will not stop.
Well, if you do get a GoFundMe page or something else like that, let me know, and I'll certainly give that information to my listeners.
Thank you very much.
And I really think that no matter what the truth is, there is a huge asymmetry between your resources and the resources of the state. And even somebody who's guilty of a crime, because after all, a trial is supposed to find out if somebody's guilty, should be on an equal footing with the state. They should have the same access to expert witnesses, all of these things. And it seems the asymmetry is so great that even people who are innocent basically have both arms tied behind their backs, and they're up against the police and the hospital, and everybody has unlimited funds. If they need to fly in an expert from Boston or San Francisco, no problem. They can find the money.
Right.
Whereas you're expected to mortgage your house or borrow from friends or go to GoFundMe. It just doesn't seem fair.
Right. It does not seem fair at all, because I do feel like if we had unlimited resources, that Joe would not be where he's at, because there's so much medical proof. There's so much that we have that I feel he would not be there if we only would have had the money, the resources.
And that's why I asked you about your financial situation, because I think if you had been, relatively wealthy, two people earning six-figure salaries, with a large house that you owned clear, you would have had the financial resources to pay bail, to pay the lawyers. Even if you'd ended up going in debt, you could have afforded good expert witnesses, good lawyers, and it would not have been anywhere near the same thing. And I think that you would have been much less likely to have been charged, because I really feel a lot of these cases, they go after people they see as vulnerable.
I agree. I think you're exactly right on that.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Charlotte. I appreciate you talking about a very emotional subject for you.
Thank you for having me on your show, and I really appreciate the opportunity because I do want to get our story out and to also advocate for other families, because there's so many others, not just our family, but there's so many others that are going through the same thing. It happens. It happens all the time, and I never realized it until we were thrown into this.
Yeah, it's like a lot of things in society. There's not near enough attention paid to these cases, and so you kind of go through life assuming that the legal system works, the medical system works, and then when you're actually faced with the reality of how the system is dysfunctional, you realize that you're not alone. I guess in one way that's not so bad, but it would be nice if to think that yours was the only case in America, but as you say, there's hundreds of these cases.
Unreal the number of people that are experiencing exactly, and if you hear the stories, it's the same thing.
Yes.
They're all the same.
I don't know if you've heard about a situation in Canada. We had a pathologist in Ontario, which is Canada's biggest province, named Charles Smith. They basically overthrew all of his testimony after years of testifying in cases like yours and convicting numerous people of various crimes on the basis of his evidence. And after years of him doing that, they agreed that he was underqualified, that he was giving false testimony, and they've had to go through and reevaluate these. And luckily, in that case, a lot of people ended up getting out of jail because they had to admit these convictions were not right.
I actually did read about that, and that's just unbelievable. And it, like I said, it happens. These things happen all the time.
Yes. Well, good luck with your case. And if there's major updates, make sure you let me know, and we'll follow as things go along.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Okay, thanks, Charlotte. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to episode 145 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Commit to monthly donations of any amount at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.